All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of Canucks Conversation, brought to you as always by the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that's designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, your friend's questionable post-game recaps, or a blown three-goal lead in the third period. The BZ4X will get you through it all. And of course, we're coming to you from the iconic Wall Center in downtown Vancouver. Looking for your next meeting space? Contact the Wall Center for all your event needs at sales@wallcenter.com. David Quadrelli, alongside Harmon Dial, our technical producer, the man at the controls is Grady Sass. We're going to be joined by Cam Robinson of Elite Prospects, the prospect guru who doesn't work for Canucks Army. Cam Robinson's going to be joining us in a matter of moments. And folks, usually we get to about the 15-minute mark to bring a guest in. Cam's being generous enough with his time to come early for us on the show, and then he's got to go pick up his kids, he said. So we're tight for time. We're tight for time here. Don't kids get out at 3 o'clock? I don't want to burn a question to Cam, yeah. So I'm going to ask you this. 3 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
I guess neither of us have kids. Cam's ready. Oh, how are you doing, Harmon?
I'm doing great. I love that start, the intro to the show, the poise and quickness you had. Canucks could have used some of that in the third period.
No kidding. And we'll talk about that loss. We're going to talk Canucks prospects. We're going to talk briefly about the game. And of course, I think the first question we're going to have for Cam is what time school gets out these days? Because it was always 3 o'clock for me.
Yeah.
Maybe parent-teacher interviews. Actually, my aunt's a teacher. I've talked about this on the show. And she's got parent-teacher interviews right now. So all the kids used to get out early when it was parent-teacher interviews?
Yeah.
Those are the days. All right. Is Cam good to go, Grady? Let's bring him in.
He's good
if
to
he
go.
Is, let's bring him in. Cam Robinson. Cam, what time do kids get out of school these days?
Oh, man, it varies, right? My kid's in elementary school, so he's off at like 2:30. It's an early finish for them.
Interesting. And then what? It changes in high school? Like, I was in high school like 2 years ago, it felt, and it was 3 o'clock all the time.
Yeah, just last week. Some high schools, you're not done until 3:30. Like, it's a wide spread these days, boys. Yeah, it's crazy out there.
Wow. Okay. How crazy has Tom Lander's first season been with BU? It's been up and down. It feels like we've heard mixed reviews from various people, depending on who you talk to. What's your take on Tom Lander's season so far?
It's been a tough transition, I would say, but I think that we should keep in mind that the jump from the J20 to the NCAA is massive. Like the juniors in Sweden to playing against 23, 24, 25 year olds in the NCAA, these kids are basically pros. A lot of them already physically stronger, more mature, the difference in the size of the ice. It's, you know, he's done okay, I would say. You know, the skating is still sublime. It's really, really nice. You know, the production's been good. He's playing on a BU team that jacks points. So, you know, the fact that he has a good handful isn't too surprising. But among, you know, U19 defenders, he's just trailing a couple of top, top eligible kids for this coming draft. The hands are a concern. You know, he's been making a lot of errors with that, trying to try anything, and he'll kind of lose the handle. He's missing some reads on some outlet passes. I haven't liked the way that he's been able to transition the puck outside of skating it out of trouble. So I think that, you know, Canucks fans probably don't want to hear that too much, that they're, you know, they're kind of their gem on the blue line prospect, someone that they selected over a kid like Zach Benson and some of these other players that are looking that they could be high end forwards, that he's not off to the quickest start. But I mean, he's a freshman. He's still really young. We knew that coming over there, it was going to be a transition. It was going to be a difficult one to start. I would have liked to see him clean it up throughout the season, but he kind of looks to be about the same player he was 2 or 3 months ago. But patience is going to be key. He's kind of a trendsetter here. He's a pioneer going from that Swedish junior to the NCAA. Not a lot of kids do it. You know, we're hearing rumors that Alexander Zetterberg, no relation to the famous Zetterberg, but, that he's going to do the same thing, that he's going to leave the J20 and he's going to go head over to the NCAA and probably play for BU next year. So Bylander's kind of setting the stage for more Swedes to do that, which is cool anyways.
For Jonathan Lekkerimäki, what's the highest probability outcome for how good he'll be in his prime?
So I've been pretty steadfast in my assessment of Lekkerimäki, is that I think he's going to be more of a second line winger that maybe won't drive play for you, but can be, you know, not necessarily a passenger, but someone who can find his spots and he can score goals, and he has that one shot goal scoring ability. But then he can be a real weapon on your top power play unit. Now, I will say the best thing that's happened in his development so far is he's added some snarl to his game, like a legitimate amount. When I was in Sweden there for the World Juniors, I was legitimately impressed with how hard he was going in on the forecheck, how his board battles, he was getting in there, he's mucking up, he was going hard to the net front, taking some abuse, because the knock on him before was too perimeter. Like, he was forced to the outside, he was kept out there, he's fairly slight, and he didn't really have that battle in him to go into those hard areas. So the fact that he's adding that to his game, and that's transitioned back to the SHL. I didn't catch his playoff game this morning, but it's going to get tighter and tighter as the playoffs ramp up here too. So we'd like to see him continue that, get a good, strong off season of training, come over to North America next year and get into the pro game over here. You know, there is a chance that he could be, maybe not Marcus Naslund, but that type of player, a first line goal scorer. That's the very top of his ceiling, is that he could be a 40 goal scorer. But probably the more realistic outcome for him is, like, you know, 25, 30 goal guy that can really be a weapon on your top unit. And then you hope you get enough out of him at 5-on-5 too.
Well, when you describe that, a player who is maybe more of a complimentary player in a top six role, can score as a one-shot scorer, I think of Brock Besser comes to mind. How similar or different would you compare Lekkerimäki and Besser as prospects?
Yeah, I'd say that Besser, the foot speed was always kind of a limiting factor for him as he was coming up, but he always found a way into the middle of the ice and he could uncork that shot. He was maybe a little bit smarter with his ability to kind of overcome the limitations with his skating. Lekkerimäki doesn't really have those same limitations. His skating's not bad. It's better than Brock's was for sure at the same age. So his is that it's just, he needs to be able to maximize all of his skills and really kind of get in there and muck it up. But, you know, that's not a terrible comparison statistically anyways, is that we could be looking at a similar thing where, you know, Brock's having a career year this year. He'll probably get 40, maybe 45 with lesser assists. And, you know, Lekkerimäki could have that kind of juice long term too.
For Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, he's coming over. We know he's coming to Abbotsford now. What should the expectations be for him? And the reason I'm asking this is because you brought up the transition for Willander from the J20 to the NCAA. But this is a guy coming from the Allsvenskan to the AHL. What's that transition going to be like? Like, what should expectations be like for Elias Pettersson in Abbotsford?
Well, I mean, the expectations can be muted because he's a youngster coming over at the end of the season to play in the AHL, and so they should be fairly low. But at the same time, I don't expect that transition to be nearly as difficult as it's been for Bylander because of the style and the role that he plays. he's just a pit bull out there. Like, he is mean and hard to play against. You don't want to go into the corners with this kid. He practices his hitting in the warmups before games on his own teammates. They run down the line and he just blasts them all. He's a physical kid, and it's kind of a meat and potatoes game, which should transition really nicely to the AHL, which is a meat and potatoes league. There's not a lot of ice out there. The skill level's, you know, so high, but not quite NHL level high. So the timing space is taken away. It can be a little bit sloppy. He's probably going to get a bit of a wake up call to some speed on the outside when he comes over, but you know, he has a good pivot. He has good four-way mobility, but I think the straight up and down north-south game that he plays should transition fairly effectively. Again, we're just going to get him in the lineup. They're going to get him in there and get his feet wet. And so that he has a better understanding of what he needs to do next season. And I think that there's a very real chance that this kid could step in and be a top four guy in Abbotsford next year. And then, you know, have a full season like that and be knocking on the door for NHL minutes. He's not that far away.
There were quite a few teams at this year's deadline that traded away a first round pick, including the Canucks. What does the, you know, from 20s onward of this year's draft kind of look like? Is it a bit of a weaker year?
Yeah, it's not a down year, but it has less pizzazz, less cachet. Some of these other years, you can look at some of these players coming out of, you know, 15 and beyond that you're like, you know, they have a wart or two, whether it's size or skating or perimeter play or whatever. But they have this like high upside if everything breaks right. There's not a ton of those guys in this draft once you get out of the top 10 or 12. Of course, there's always going to be some surprises, probably some kid picked in the 60s that might end up like the third best player in the draft. But nothing obvious at this point. It's going to be like most years when you're picking in the 20s that you're throwing a dart. You're going to find someone that has a couple of skills, maybe a differentiator, you know, whether it's their shot or their vision or their two-way ability, their strength, and that you're like, you know, this can be an NHL trait. Let's build around it. So that's where you trust your scouting staff that they're going to have some eyes on a lot of these players. And then someone's going to go to bat for somebody and be like, we think that we can work with this package and turn them into X, Y, or Z. Because you won't be looking at a guy being like, that's a top six winger. That's a top four defenseman. They just won't be available at that point of the draft.
Cam, what did you make of the Canucks trade deadline? They choose not to trade any of their prospects away. Like, what did you think of their deadline as a whole, the NHL Canucks?
I was fine with it. I mean, obviously everybody's looking at the kind of the arms race going on in the West there and being like, they got to do something. They need to keep adding. And obviously it would have been great to add another top six winger. I'm sure they would have been thrilled to do that. Or, a number 4, 5, 6 defenseman, someone that can actually play 15 to 20 minutes a night on that blue line. But, you know, they did their heavy lifting early, right? Obviously they got Lindholm. It hasn't broken right yet, but that's why you get him early, is that you hopefully get rid of that hiccup time that, and then he can maybe figure it out in the playoffs. Zadorov and bringing in Casey DeSmith early and Lafferty, they've kind of did their work ahead of time, probably paid a little less except for Lindholm to do so at those stages. And so I think that they feel comfortable with the team. I mean, the record speaks for itself. They've been excellent against top teams. So they have to trust kind of the chemistry that they have in the room, and that the cap space was kind of king at the end of the day.
Cam, in your mind, who is the Canucks MVP this year?
Yeah, this one's easy for me. It's Quinn Hughes. I think he's, you know, he's leads all defensemen in points and even strength points. And he's their leader on the blue line. When he's going, the whole team's going. When he's not, you can see it's kind of a bit of a struggle. He's should win himself his first Norris. I mean, he could be up for the Hart legitimately this year. He'll probably, you know, he probably won't be a finalist, but he could be a guy in that, you know, 4, 5, 6 spot for a Hart trophy. So for me, he's the kind of the beating heart on this team. It's been great to see him do it as his first year as captain too. So yeah, no, he's the MVP for me.
All right. Well, we were going to do that for our next segment, and Harm and I came in the studio and we're like, who's the MVP? And both of us think it's Quinn Hughes. So it might not be super interesting now that we all three of us are agreeing that Quinn Hughes is the MVP. Thanks so much, Cam. Really appreciate you taking the time today.
Of course, boys. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Cam Robinson. You can find him on Twitter at @hockey_Robinson. You can find his work over at Elite Prospects. Work. Little voice crack there. It's all good. We'll come out of it. We'll come out of it just fine. All right. We've got a lot of interaction in the YouTube live chat, and it's going to be good because later, to set up anyone else, we're going to talk about the Canucks team MVP. We both think it's Quinn Hughes. I thought it might be a little more of an entertaining segment, but we'll make it entertaining because we'll still give the case for the other guy, JT Miller. I don't think anybody's coming out here saying, oh, Elias Pettersson's been their MVP this year. Yeah. Maybe someone might say Demko, but I'm the goalie guy, and every year I say it's Demko. It's not Demko this year. Demko's not their MVP this year, which is crazy to say. I think it's Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, then a big gap between, then you got Elias Pettersson, Thatcher Demko, Noah Juulsen. All right, let's get to last night's game. The Canucks fall 4-3 in overtime to the Colorado Avalanche. Harm, this team looked so good through 40 minutes of play, 39 minutes of play last night, 39 minutes and 42 seconds of play. They looked phenomenal. They looked like they were swarming the Avs. They were getting back to everything that we've seen them do in October, everything we've seen them do over this four-game win streak that they had going into last night's game. They were just so good on the forecheck. They were troublesome through the neutral zone for the opposition. They were so good all over the ice. And I don't know what more you can say about how good they were, but then it all falls apart in the third period.
Yeah, that was a tough one to stomach. I mean, that was like a, whether you want to call it a kick in the nuts, a gut punch. That's how it felt watching that game, because you're in a spot where you're like, there are an endless number of positive storylines coming out of this. You're thinking there are not enough ways to throw praise on these guys, and then it just all falls apart. It really felt like in the third period that the Canucks seemed to lose their poise, seemed to lose their cool, because all of a sudden what worked for them in the first period was they were transitioning the puck up the ice so quickly. That's a massive part of why they were having territorial success, was they were connecting on passes, they were in sync, they were getting the forecheck established. Whereas in the third period, I think it started to get in their head a little bit that, okay, Colorado's got some momentum now. You obviously have a couple of, in Ian's Cole case, a critical call go against you, and all of a sudden they started to feel nervous. They looked scared to make a mistake. Started to almost seem like you could see guys overthinking a little bit rather than just playing on their instincts, right? That's what it felt like. They came out flying. They were playing on their instincts. The pressure of the game started to get to them in the third period. The number of failed clearings that they had, the number of botched breakouts. I mean, even for them to get into the situation where they eventually allowed that 5-on-3 goal, it started with Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, of all people, who you would least expect to botch a breakout. They're unable to break the puck out. Then Pettersson takes that, I think it was a slash penalty that gets them into that penalty trouble. The other big part of that night was you had JT Miller going, obviously, and his line at 5-on-5, it was a 2-to-1 goal differential against Nathan MacKinnon. Or at least that's what McKinnon's 5-on-5 numbers were. You won that matchup. If you win that 5-on-5 matchup, you should win that game 9-9.
Just going to say it. That should be enough to beat the Colorado Avalanche. That should be enough to beat the Colorado Avalanche. So the thing I said to you, and again, it sounds so sweeping and reactive, but like JT Miller dragged them into that fight last night, and Elias Pettersson's line, not just Elias Pettersson, Elias Pettersson's line just dragged them right out of it. Like that was, I think that was the worst that line's played since they've been put together.
Yeah.
I think 15% Corsi rating. They got, what was it, 12-1 they got outchanced?
Yeah.
That just can't happen. And it was, look, it was Casey Mittelstadt. It was Casey Mittelstadt, who back in 2017, a lot of people hoped the Canucks would draft over Elias Pettersson.
Couldn't do a push-up, though.
Pull up. Couldn't do a pull up.
Right. Well, Mittelstadt's legit, but the bigger thing is, like, you had Brandon Duhaime, and I think it was Yakov Trenin on the other wing. Yeah. Right? Like, how many times did Brandon Duhaime get mentioned on the broadcast for a phenomenal game? The guy was a fourth liner in Minnesota. Now he's playing in their top six, and it's like if Sam Lafferty was all of a sudden elevated to the top six, and all night he's just creating chances and dominating you in the offensive zone. Like, that's what happened. It's especially with them missing Parise, with them missing Logan O'Connor, with them not having Gabe Landeskog. Like, you've got to win that. And Arturi Lehkonen.
And on a second of a back-to-back. And I know we broke down yesterday that MacKinnon didn't play a ton in that game against Calgary, and they were able to kind of keep their guys fresh. But, like, Kyle McCarr played close to 24 minutes in Calgary, and I know he wasn't great last night. That's the only positive maybe from last night, is if a lot of voters were watching last night's game for a head-to-head matchup of Hughes and McCarr. I didn't think Hughes was very good, but he still came up ahead of McCarr, I thought.
Yeah, McCarr was on the ice for 3 goals against.
Yeah, McCarr wasn't good last night.
You would have thought that when the game went on, the Canucks would have had the edge from the back-to-back, but the adverse actually happened. The Avs took over in that third period, and just there was no response from the Canucks. It was a complete momentum shift.
Yeah, and JT Miller talked about that post-game. Let's hear from Rick Tocchet, who also spoke post-game, about his team's performance and, you know, really squandering that three-goal lead.
I mean, we need people to grab a hold of it. You know, like their guys took over. You know, McKinnon said, I'm taking this game. We need somebody to, a couple of guys to counteract that. And I thought we didn't, you know. Casey Smith battled really hard tonight for us. That was a positive.
So Casey Smith did play well. I'm glad he mentioned that. But there again is that call out that, well, call out. I don't want to make it bigger than it is, but there is that quote that he also gave against the Boston Bruins a few months back when the Canucks stars kind of went to sleep and Boston stars took over that game. There's that same quote of their guys came to play tonight. That's, to me, that feels like the head coach. Not, of course, he's not taking a shot at anybody, but it is also a bit of a wake-up call, and I think the insinuation there might be, yeah, okay, I'd like our guys to also do that. And hey, like we said, JT Miller was great last night for the first 40 minutes. I don't think anybody on the Canucks had a really good third period, but again, you brought it up. Outscoring the McKinnon line 2-1, that should be enough to win. JT Miller did his part last night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did his part, and then some, and we've got a lot. And again, I don't want to turn this into a slugfest in the YouTube live chat here, but we've got a lot of hate for Elias Pettersson, and I'll just point out his line was really bad too. Like, it wasn't just Elias Pettersson, but I did say it. Like, his line, it feels like if you're pointing at one thing that really went wrong for them last night, and that's the title of today's episode, is what went wrong and the Canucks lost to the Avalanche, I think it's Elias Pettersson's line getting outchanced 12-1 at 5-on-5 against the Casey Mittelstadt and Brandon Duhaime, the spare parts line, basically. Yeah.
Pettersson with the worst Corsi amongst the forwards.
Exactly. Yep. 15%. Mike Lou broke it down in the stats today over at Canucks Army. No 5-on-5 shots on goal last night for Elias Pettersson.
He was fighting the puck. Even when he did get any semblance of time and space, it felt like he wasn't able to really settle and corral the puck. He wasn't able to make any plays. He even had a rush where he was entering the offensive zone in the third period, sort of working his way into the high slot area, and he couldn't pull the trigger on a shot.
Yeah. Here's JT Miller talking about last night's game. JT Miller had some insight after the game.
Well, I mean, that goal definitely gave him belief. I mean, that's all that team really needed. I mean, it happens though. We should be able to come out in the third and with 2-goal lead at home against one of the best teams in the league. I mean, I don't understand any better reason to get up for that. I mean, it just sucks. This has happened before, and just kind of hope it works out when we have leads instead of take control of the game. And like, we have been good, you know, with the lead, but getting to that point of the year where it's, you know, just hard to swallow, really.
This is a really interesting, interesting quote from JT Miller, because we know him as a guy who does not struggle to get up for these games. Like, when it's McDavid, when it's McKinnon, you can put JT Miller up against those guys and you can know that he's going to give them like a hard battle on most nights, right? I don't want to read into it too much, but who is he talking to when he says, I don't know how you can't get up for that game? Maybe I am reading into it too much. Maybe I am.
Well, I mean, the team as a whole, right? Like, let's be honest. It's not like one or two guys, they all fell asleep at the wheel in the third period. Yep. Nobody was able to change the spark or the energy of that game. Like, even the third line that I thought Garland was excellent in the first two periods. Normally in a period like that earlier in the season, let's say if you had Bluger, Joshua, and Garland together, they might stack a couple of offensive zone shifts and turn the momentum of a game. And that's what I remember from especially the first half of the season, is so many times the Canucks would get scored on, but they wouldn't let the other team grab a hold of the game's momentum. They'd respond immediately, whether it was the Miller line or the Bluger, Garland, Joshua line, that would go out and immediately have a response shift, spend some time in the offensive zone, and you're like, okay, they got this. They're getting back to executing their game plan. Whereas in this game, it sort of felt like once Colorado got even a sniff of momentum, that there was zero pushback. It was just, okay, Colorado's just grabbing this game.
Yeah. And that goal to end the second period gave them just the right amount of glimmer of hope to go into their dressing room and say, you know what, guys, it was a tough, you know, 40 minutes for the most part, but we got them now. And that team's in a well-oiled machine. It was their third game this year where they've been down 3-0 and have come back to win. And with their big dogs, you could feel the momentum shift. And then, you know, the Pettersson penalty to start the third, and We all saw the Susie puck over glass and the Cole thing. And I don't want to get into the Cole thing too much, but when you take penalties like that against that team with all that firepower, man, you're playing with fire, and they got torched.
That shouldn't have even been a penalty.
There were two equally dangerous plays last night when Josh Manson drove JT Miller's head into the boards. And of course, when Ian Cole tried to chop off Nate McKinnon's hand. And both of those were assessed the exact same way. 2 minutes for each of those guys. Have we seen anything? Is Josh Manson getting a hearing or anything?
No, nothing.
Fine.
He get dodged it.
Okay, so
Dolly announced this morning that there was no supplemental discipline.
Here's the problem. If JT Miller stays down, which a lot of guys would have, that's 5 minutes, and then they would have reviewed it. And they probably would have been like, oh, yeah, okay, he did drive his elbow into the back of the dude's head. Like,
yeah,
that had intent written all over it.
I can't stand that thing, though. Like, it shouldn't matter whether the player is down or not.
Yeah, exactly.
You still committed the principal act in the moment.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And suspensions, too. Like, the injury shouldn't matter. But anyways,
go on. Then if it was Evgeny Kuznetsov, he would have come back immediately for the power play.
Tim Stützle stays down, get the stretcher. Okay, I'm good. Let's go. Let's rock and roll.
Or like anybody on the Winnipeg Jets, Mark Scheifele.
Yeah. Well, Nate Dogg sold that well
on
that Cole slash. And I mean, it was a tough call, but the stick was still in the hands. To me, that's a 50-50 call because it's a star player. And we know superstars get that superstar treatment in this league. But, Tockett's talked about that, like the stick penalties this year. How many times has he mentioned that? You can't do that to that team, no matter if you think it's a penalty or not. There was other penalties in that third period that ultimately cost them.
Yeah, I don't blame Cole at all, to be honest, for that, especially in a 5-on-4 situation.
Yeah,
like that's a really, really tough break to go against.
And then you have the Hughes penalty.
I know,
right? So it's like, you know, like you just mentioned, what you're alluding to is that on a 5-on-4, that Cole penalty doesn't usually get called. A 5-on-4, even the other way, that Hughes thing usually doesn't get called. But I saw people pointing out that look, we saw a lot of game management last night for sure. But that Hughes penalty, someone pointed out, was probably because they missed something on Lafferty earlier in the game. I think Miles Wood and him got tied up, and Miles Wood was the only one that got a penalty, even though Lafferty was kind of hanging on to him. And refs don't like that. Like, refs don't like when you dupe them. But anyways, it wasn't the best officiated game. But again, I'm not too concerned about the officiating because that's going to happen in the playoffs.
Yeah,
you can't, if you're the Canucks, you can't let what happened last night happen in the playoffs. That's going to cost you games a lot more than the officiating in the playoffs is.
Well, it's also, you got to take the learning lessons from games like these now, because you're a team that doesn't have a lot of playoff experience. And you go back to the first time the Canucks played the Jets at home, how they lost that game, another hard-fought playoff-type game. It was physical, it was chippy, and what did we see in the third period? Canucks getting a little overzealous, getting too wrapped up in the physicality and the emotions, chasing hits, and that resulting in a costly third period. Well, I looked at that game and went, well, good. I'm glad that they got their experience in that type of game in, I think it was February, rather than going through it in April, and now it's cost you a playoff game. Same thing here.
Exactly.
I really hope that you can draw some learning lessons, some experience from how to hold your composure and how you really, even up 3-0, you can't let them back. You can't let a team like that sniff anything. And even if they do, like, as much as we want to talk about, yes, that goal at the end of the second period was a huge game changer, still, you're 3-1 up going into the third period at home ice. Like, you should close that out 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah, and how
they had
different
the late power play too. Like, Hoglander had that chance that, you know, if he roofs it over the glove, who knows, the outcome's different. But the fact of the matter is, Colorado goes 2-for-4 on their power play. Canucks 0-for-3. Special teams was a factor in this.
How different does that game look if Elias Lindholm buries that chance he had?
Oh,
right? Yeah. To put him up 4-0? Like, that's the dagger. 3-0 is usually the dagger. Well, 4-0.
Immediately after he missed that, and Colorado had another chance against, I was like, oh boy, they better not score before the end of the period and have that be a moment we look back at.
The thing that was so crazy about that goal was, that was the first time all night, it felt like, that the Canucks were lacking defensive zone coverage, like where they were puck watching and they were people watching. They were watching the opposition skate right into their crease. And I think it was Juulsen and Lindholm were the two guys. Nobody picked up the guy in the crease. Not one of them.
And they couldn't get pucks out of their own zone. They couldn't make, you know, 5-10 foot passes in zone. You know, how many clearing attempts did you see where they tried to go off the boards and out, and Colorado kept it in and they just kept the momentum up?
What were you going to say?
Lindholm as well, right? On that goal at the end of the second period, don't love his and Juleson's coverage. And then on Colton's rebound, I think it was that goal. At the start of that shift, he couldn't get the puck out on a relatively routine play. And I know that wasn't the only mistake on it, but for a player who hasn't been driving a lot of offense, who is sort of now sort of marketed, patented as a reliable defensive player, somebody who can, in late game situations, help you protect a lead.
Yeah.
That's the type of veteran player that you hope would have been able to hold his composure and help the Canucks defend that lead.
Yep. We're getting a lot of that in the YouTube live chat. This one from Mr. Whale. The leaders need to step up and be those guys you can rely on. Miller is a guy who is always, always trying to win, which brings us pretty comfortably into our next segment. But first, I'm going to tell you about a couple of our sponsors. The first one being Park Casino. Park is the official casino resort of the Vancouver Canucks, and Sakaris and Price were live on location yesterday. Come grab a bite, watch Sakaris and Price, go do whatever you want at Park. On days the Canucks play, you can receive 15% off the game day menu with your game ticket at BC Kitchen. Park is just steps away from Rogers Arena, and when you sign up for Encore Rewards, you get $10 free play to use in the Canucks Gaming Corner. Whether it's a game day or just night out with friends, let Park be your place to play. All right, the other one that I want to tell you about. Oh, I'm fired up about this one, Harm. I was practicing this word today because I knew I had to do this ad read, and I'm excited to do it for Four Winds Brewing. It's the beer juxtapose. I was practicing saying that word. I thought I'd screw it up. I didn't. And Four Winds Brewing definitely didn't screw it up. If you're looking for something hoppy for your fridge this weekend, we recommend you check out the Four Winds Juxtapose IPA, a 2-time silver medal winner at the World Beer Cup. This juicy IPA is tropical and funky at the same time. Available at liquor stores across the province or for home delivery anywhere in BC through the online shop at fourwindsbrewing.ca. Look at that beautiful can. Juxtapose IPA, locally owned and operated in Delta, BC. That is Four Winds Brewing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This is going to be a short segment. We wanted it to be longer. The Canucks team MVP. The reason I'm doing this is because I saw people on Twitter talking about how JT Miller is this team's MVP. And hey, I was throwing out JT Miller is going to start entering some heart conversation with the way he's been playing lately. He's been great, but Quinn Hughes is still better. Like, Quinn Hughes is still the guy above him in the heart conversation, has been all season, should be there still. I'm probably going to put him fifth on my ballot, fourth, fifth. I know you have that rule where your first place Norris winner usually goes fifth on your heart ballot. I like that, actually.
That's actually not a rule I have.
I got that from you, though. You told me to do that, and I was like, it's a good idea.
I didn't tell you to do that as a hard and fast rule.
Oh, maybe I took it as a hard and fast
situation.
I actually didn't do it last year because I had Erik Karlsson first on my Norris ballot, And I was like, Erik Karlsson ain't fifth on my, I'm not putting Erik Karlsson fifth on my heart ballot. Can't remember who I did on my heart ballot. But anyways, Quinn Hughes, this team's MVP. Explain.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to put it is he's been by far the best player at his position this year. He's up to 76 points in 67 games, and Makar's the closest to him at 73 points. But we saw last night, right? Torch for three goals against. He has not been himself defensively. So once you factor that in, I mean, the next guy is maybe Roman Josi, who's got 65 points, 11 back of Quinn. Like, to me, it's Quinn Hughes and then everybody else in this Norris race. Earlier in the season, maybe it was a bit closer with some other guys, but it's not close to this point. Whereas in Miller's case, he's been outstanding, but how many people are saying JT Miller has been by far the best center in the NHL? Nobody is saying that.
Well,
right? I mean, every analytical model has Hughes ahead of Miller. And the other thing to keep in mind is I think we're kind of desensitized to Hughes being a one-man breakout machine, right? Without him, I think for this season as a whole, Vancouver would have a lot of struggles breaking the puck out. Think about before the season how massively challenging it's been for this blue line to transition the puck out of the defensive zone. You subtract Quinn Hughes from that equation, you're spending way more time in the defensive zone. JT Miller is spending way more time in the defensive zone.
And JT Miller's looking worse. Like, everybody's looking worse if Quinn Hughes is gone. And that's the thing, is if you take JT Miller out of this lineup, yes, you need to find a new center for your second line or your first line at this rate. Yeah, that's your biggest issue. But you have guys that can step in and you have some more depth. And again, I'm not saying that the Canucks' lack of defensive depth on the left side is what makes Quinn Hughes valuable. But in terms of value to this team, most valuable to this team, it's Quinn Hughes without a shadow of a doubt. If you take away Miller, I think the only argument I can come up with is that Brock Besser would not have 35 goals on the year.
Oh, yeah.
If JT Miller wasn't playing the way he is. And JT Miller, like I said, like, in my mind, it's Quinn Hughes. It's JT Miller is a very close second, very close, but he's still second. And then I think it's like a tier below. There's a big space between the next person, whether that's Elias Pettersson or Thatcher Demko. I might lean Thatcher Demko, to be honest with you. I think Thatcher Demko might be three. I think that's maybe a more compelling argument to have. Yeah. You also agree it's Demko?
For him, I mean, maybe recency bias is kicking in, but yes.
Okay, number four.
So. Four is Pettersson.
Okay, I had Noah Juulsen, I'm just kidding. Okay. You know what? I hate to say it, but Noah Juulsen, not great last night. I think he was on for all four goals against. Yeah. Nikita Zadorov also didn't play great. I loved that he had the Gordie Howe hat trick, but wasn't great at 5-on-5. Like, he really wasn't. And that's the thing. Last night was a good example of why you give up a rental package, a third and a fourth, to go get Nikita Zadorov for your season. Obviously, Carson Soucy was out when they went and got Nikita Zadorov, but last night was a great example why you go out and get him. You're going to love him during the playoffs. You're going to love him, but you also can't put too much on just Nikita Zadorov. Like, he needs to be in that third pairing role.
Yeah.
And he's looking for top four money this offseason, which is why, ultimately, and I know Rick Dollywall had the report today that the Canucks haven't had any contract talks with Nikita Zadorov. He spoke with Dan Milstein, and Milstein, rightfully so, as an agent would, is fine with that because he knows his client's going to get paid on July 1st. Canucks can't be the team to sign that. As much as it pains me to say it, the Canucks can't be the team to sign Nikita Zadorov's next contract.
Yeah. By the way, I think it's so funny. And of course it makes sense. Agents are going to advocate for their clients, but how big some of these homers are, like, for their clients, like Dan Milstein calling Nikita Zadorov the best defenseman on the Flames publicly. Or I'm thinking back to, what was the other example that I was just like, man, this is blasphemous. There was a different agent.
It wasn't
Alan Walsh.
Okay.
Not with Philip Pronick, although he's been calling him Phil the Thrill as like a hashtag, which nobody, it's like every
it's
time.
It's going to catch on, hashtag, dude.
it's not never catching on. But I remember he got into a huge fight with Dom at The Athletic, trying to argue that Jonathan Huberdeau was worth MVP.
Oh, I remember this. That's right.
Just like completely slandering Dom, and got to the point where he's like, was tweeting about how he's spoken to other people at The Athletic that don't have respect for what Dom does. And I'm just like, dude, chill. Like,
really makes you think.
And now look at Huberto since.
Yeah, it really makes you think. Oh, that'd be a good segment for the summer. The most blasphemous things, like go back in history, the most blasphemous things agents have said about
there's
the Clouds.
Okay, there's another one, but I don't think I should say it.
I know exactly. It's also from Milstein, right?
Yes.
All right, don't say it. We'll save it.
I don't want to be too mean Vancouver's AGM.
Well, now Calgary's 8 clients out there. Losing Chad Knight. Yeah, 8 clients on the Flames now.
Holy
I can't
crap.
Name them off the top of my head, but Kuzmenko's there now, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Flames just love their former Canucks.
They do love their former Canucks. Man, anyways, okay, we're not going to talk about the Flames. We're not going to get moving on the Flames. All right, what else do we have here? Yeah, the MVP thing. I was really hoping that'd be a more fun segment. It really wasn't. I thought I'd be able to play devil's advocate more for Miller, but it's just disingenuous to come out in here and say, yeah, JC Miller's been this team's most valuable player over Quinn Hughes.
If you were doing it in the calendar year of 2024, I think you could make the pretty strong argument that it's Miller first, but overall for the whole body of work of the season, I like what you said, Quads, and I messaged you this. Like, if you're taking away Quinn Hughes from this team, they are so screwed. Filip Hronek isn't having the year he is. If you take Miller away, yeah, they'll be in trouble, but they have other guys that could fill in maybe, I don't know, half of his production, like Lindholm, Suter types, right?
All right. We ignored the chat and we shouldn't have because the chat is very pro Miller.
Yeah.
The chat is very pro Miller. This one from Quinn DeGregorio. Oh, that's a name you can trust. Hello, Quinn. This one, MVP Miller, because he has continued to play against the best players and has scored many OT game winning goals this season. I raise you this, Quinn. Without the other Quinn, without Quinn Hughes, not only do the Canucks not get to overtime in a lot of those games, he's also against the top competition. Like, he's playing out there with Miller. Quinn Hughes is always matching up against the top competition. So I get what you're saying, and you've got a name that you can trust. But yeah, I just look at that and say, without Quinn, I don't think this team is getting to a lot of those places that they've been this season, including overtime.
Well, also, Quinn doesn't have as many, like, loud, fun highlight reel moments as like a JT Miller was.
That's true.
Which sounds crazy to say because Hughes has racked up so many points, but most of what he's doing when he's producing offense are assists, or he's consistently just breaking the puck out. Like, what's going to stand out to the average viewer more, or seem more exciting or more impactful? Like, over the course of, let's say, a game, I don't know what number you want to throw out there, but like 10 perfect zone exits that help you spend the majority of your shifts in the offensive zone, or like one rush that sets up an Ilya Mikheyev goal, right? It's going to be the rush that sets up the Ilya Mikheyev goal, especially when Miller's also throwing the body and he's physical,
like skating it through the neutral zone. Like that one was like a chip and chase to himself. Like, he chips it in, he's the first guy on the puck.
And like I said, I think we're desensitized to how sick Quinn Hughes is as a skater.
I think, and I hate to say it, but like, and the YouTube, and again, I said YouTube chat is very pro Miller. The poll that we have in the YouTube chat, 68% of people say Hughes, 24 say Miller, 9% Demko. So it's just a few people that are very, very pro Miller here. But I hate to say it, but like, it would take like a 2-3 game sample size without Quinn Hughes for people to be like, okay, I was wrong. Quinn Hughes is this team's engine.
Well, also, I remember, I think it was one of the games against Chicago where Quinn Hughes didn't even cross my mind as, oh, he's having a good game. But then I saw a bunch of tweets from Chicago beat writers saying, wow, Quinn Hughes is amazing. Look at his skating. Look at his playmaking. Look at how he drives his Canucks team. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, this seems
this
like
was an off night.
this seems like such an ordinary night. And I think, again, I do think just because his moments aren't as loud, it's more the accumulation of he's making a sick play almost every shift that he's driving possession and sort of setting the table for others, which doesn't seem as sexy as JT Miller, sort of the one shift where he's going to single-handedly set up a goal for himself or his teammate.
Nick P., depressing that PD isn't anywhere near this conversation.
I mean, yes, but also, like, I'm at the point where, yeah, look, when we get to the playoffs, he's going to need to step up against top comp, but the guy's still got 79 points in 67 games. Like, let's not make a mountain out of a molehill. Yes, has he
had a worse year than last year when you consider how much better the environment has been? Yes. But star players go through ups and downs sometimes. Like, he was their MVP last year. You want him to get back to that form. It's not like he's at a point where he's on pace for like 70 points. You're like, what's wrong with this guy? He's still going to put up 100 points in all likelihood. And like, how many centers can put up 100 points in back-to-back years while being pretty solid two-way?
Absolutely. The one thing I'll say about JT Miller is, watching the games recently, and especially last night's, the thing I was saying to myself and thinking about was, on Monday's show, we had someone in the YouTube chat point out, are you worried about the final years of Miller's contract? And basically what I said was, no, you're not, because he's playing at such a surplus value right now that it almost makes up for those latter years. And when you sign a contract like that, you're hoping that you're going to get a lot of value out of the front years, even if you know the back years aren't going to be great. That's what you're hoping for. The Canucks are getting that and much more. JT Miller is holding up his end of that contract. Like, he's holding up his end of the bargain, and then some. So we'll see how the final years look. But man, the way he's playing right now and the way you assume he's going to play for the next at least 2-3 years, it's going to make up for those final 2-3 years, because it's a 7-year deal. It'll make up for those years. Again, you're not going to be happy. Like, the conversations we're going to have about 36-year-old JT Miller are going to be different than the conversations we have about 30-year-old JT Miller. But Uncle Quads, how old are we going to be in 30? We're going to be 30 at that point. 30-year-old Quads and Harmon are going to tell you to think back, all these young kids in the chat that aren't going to remember the prime JT Miller.
Aren't going to remember all his riz.
All his riz. That's right. We'll tell everybody about the JT.
That's a running bit, by the way. That's not a serious thing.
Yep. People know the riz bit by this point.
Well, I mean, sometimes you have new listeners.
That's true. We did get a lot of new listeners after the trade deadline. We should do like every quarter of the season, we should do a rundown of all the bits we have, all the inside jokes.
If we ever say the word riz, it's never unironically. It's always ironically. Please. It's always satire.
Satire. Yep.
Should I transition to anyone else?
Oh, yeah. Anyone else? Go ahead.
All right, folks. It's time for Anyone Else, presented by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms apply. Double Dash is clutch. I think I used it.
Here we go. Nice.
What did I grab? I grabbed some Chipotle.
Nice.
And then I realized I wanted some protein bars because I'm in bulking season, right? I'm trying to put weight on.
Yeah.
And on the road, you don't get to eat as much. So I figured, quickly order some protein bars. Had protein bars and Chipotle.
Can't beat it. Can't beat Double Dash. You can't beat Double Dash. Yeah. Yeah, so go check it out. If you haven't used it yet, like Carmen said, NATION25 is the promo code. 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Hey, if you use some Double Dash on that, make it a big order. Use Double Dash. Okay, I wanted to get this one right away because it really felt like that MVP segment just turned into Anyone Else. So we're just going to continue reading the YouTube live chat. Jack Maloney, and I like this take from him. I like this point because, hey, as much as, you know, I'm stirring the pot today and we're talking about Elias Pettersson, Jack's pointing this out. Last game wasn't great. But Elias Pettersson's been great the first four games since he signed that contract. The four-game winning streak that the Canucks were on, Elias Pettersson was great during those games.
Yeah, and you think about that LA goal. That's the game-breaking moment that turned the tide in Vancouver's favor. And obviously, JT Miller had the overtime winner, but the Canucks don't get into overtime if it isn't for Pettersson giving them that juice against a stingy LA defense, the way that he came off the bench and dangled into the inside. Like, those are the types of moments in playoff like situations where there isn't a lot of space. You just sometimes need elite skill to take over. And he did that. That's a big reason why the Canucks won that game. Yeah. He hasn't been on the same level as Miller, especially since the calendar flipped to 2024, but let's not act like he hasn't been, important, especially in January. Like, he was so good in January too. He was scoring at a 3/4 per game pace in terms of goals. He was nuts.
Yeah. All right. This one from PHS in the YouTube live chat, and that's what I'm gonna have to call you now. Sorry, man. Hot take: the Canucks should do a sign and trade with Hronek to a rival team. His contract at $8 to $8.5 million will be an anchor without Hughes carrying him, borderline nurse tier. This is really interesting because the Philip Hronek discourse is starting to pick up in the market naturally, as it would. And it, look, like, we all know how media works. We know that there is the team and there is the agent. And it feels like the team got their message out first, and now the agent is trying to catch up and get his message out. So you're seeing half the media talking about how Philip Hronek is definitely getting at least $8+ million. And then you're seeing the other half say the Canucks aren't going to sign that. The Canucks are going to look for this range. I just personally, I love it. I love how media works. I love how it all works. I love, you know, the back and forth,
the leaks.
Yeah, the leaks. Yeah. And it's not even leaks. It's not even leaks. There's no actual information. It's just that, hey, this is what I think.
The agents and the team is talking to their guys in the media, and they float things out, and it's used essentially as negotiation tactics.
Yeah. And it's fun to follow along. But let's answer this question, because I am, and look, I'm not getting this take from anyone, but I'm kind of in the camp that, okay, it's like Zadorov, where, yes, you like the player. Love me some Nikita Zadorov. But for the Canucks and the situation that they're in, there has to be a limit of where you're willing to go. And I think, although it sucks because he just gave up a first and a second round pick for him, and he's been a pretty solid fit on this team, you have to have the same principle and the same philosophy with Philip Hronek. And I think the range that I start to look at and say, okay, this is too much, is about $7 to $7.5 million. Like, I think $7.5 million, I don't call it an overpay because I think that's such a dramatic term, but like,
it's pushing it.
That is pushing it, man. Like, 7.5 is a bit much for Philip Hronek on like an 8-year deal. Like, I don't know.
Eight is where you're thinking about this guy's an important piece, but I don't know if we can afford to sign at this number.
Philip Hronek's yet to hold down a pair this season on his own.
Yeah.
Like, that's a conversation that we were having at the start of the year when he's playing so well was, oh, what's the contract going to look like? And it's so hard to tell if he plays the whole season with Quinn Hughes. Look at Hronek's minutes away from Quinn Hughes. It ain't good. It's not good.
Well, you know what the problem is? Contract negotiations are often built around statistical comps, right? How many points are you putting up? What ice time are you logging? Of course, plus minus goes into it, even though you can agree or disagree in terms of its merit as a statistic. That's what is used to define comparables, to say Hronek should be paid like this guy or like that guy. It's what you're mostly going to use in arbitration because it's objective, right? The problem is Hronek isn't as valuable as those counting stats because A, he is in part being propped up by Quinn Hughes, and B, defensively, we know that he's pretty... he has his moments. He's inconsistent. And those are things that if you're in the Canucks situation, for example, in an arbitration case, how would you prove that Philip Hronek is subpar defensively, let's say? Because what metric are you going to point to? There is no metric. You kind of have to lean on the eye test, but what is a third party arbitrator going to think if you get to that point in arbitration? It's not like the Canucks are going to be able to say, watch back every Philip Hronek shift this year, Mr. Judge.
Yeah.
And you can see that he's not as good defensively as his plus minus or his goals against rate indicates.
Yeah. To get back to the original question, though, yeah, I think that's a good idea. Like, I think that's the way you would go about having a bidding war. But I also wonder if the Canucks will have the philosophy of, we're not going to let teams talk contract with Philip Hronek, because we saw Noah Hanifin basically hijack the trade negotiations in Calgary because he had those rights where he was like, yeah, you can trade for me, but I'm not going to sign with you if I don't like where you are. And he ends up in Vegas. And it was Frank Saravalli's words that Noah Hanifin and his representatives basically hijacked that situation, that trade negotiation from the Calgary Flames. And look, the Canucks don't want to get in that position. If there's anything we learned with the whole Elias Pettersson situation and what eventually ended in a signing, the Canucks don't want to end up in that situation. So it'll be interesting to see. It'll be really, really interesting here.
I also think that while I understand the logic of that idea, pulling it off in reality is going to be much more difficult, because guess what? Every other team is going to know that Hronek is commanding this type of number, yeah, this type of contract. And if the Canucks are concerned about that number and contract, most other teams in the NHL are going to be concerned about it too, which is going to hinder his trade value. Look, there's still going to be teams that are heavily interested.
San Jose would give up everything for Filip Hronek. Mike Greer?
No.
Yeah, Mike Greer.
But like a halfway, like a middling or a contending team. There'd Columbus. Be some that'd be interested, but you're not getting like a massive haul. It would hinder his trade value. And the other side of it too is if you're even entertaining the idea of let's flip him because his contract demands are too high, before you even go down that road, you need to know who's your plan B, who's your check down option to play top pair right side minutes, because those types of defensemen aren't easy to acquire. You That's need really one of those already in your mind that, hey, we're going to target this guy. Otherwise, you don't want to end up in a situation where it's what? Hughes and some...
Juleson. It might be Juleson.
Right?
Say like, his name, Harm. Noah Juleson.
I really hope.
Only right shot defenseman signed for next year.
Oh my goodness.
Say his name, Harm.
No.
Say his name.
I really don't want to think about that type of possibility, and I don't think it will happen.
Fair enough. Okay, Grady Salinas, we have a Facebook comment. Let's see it here. Facebook comment question. I want to get to it. All right, this one from Matt Jones. No way Juleson should be on to start overtime. We finally got a good defense group, and we're starting our seventh defenseman in OT on penalty kill. This is a good point, actually, from Matt. I was thinking about this because I pointed out that Zadorov and Juleson didn't play great last night. Juleson on for all four. Zadorov, I believe, on for three of the Avs' goals. Their ice time, very high. Kind of goes back to that conversation that we had earlier in the year about Tyler Myers. Why is Tyler Myers out against Jack Hughes? Why are those guys out as much as they were last night?
Yeah, in OT, I don't have a problem with it because Soucy would normally be on the ice. He's in the box. So, I mean, I think that Ian Cole was the other defender, but then who else are you going to put out there? I mean, I don't have a lot more confidence in Filip Hronek as a PKer than I do Juleson. Juleson's best work has typically been on the PK. Normally, Myers might get a look there. Myers is obviously hurt. Who else are you going to roll with?
It's very fair.
I mean, I don't have any more confidence in Zadorov necessarily.
I'd like to see Quinn Hughes kill more penalties.
I don't know.
You don't agree?
I love Hughes defensively at 5-on-5.
I loved Hughes on the
penalty. But I don't want
kill.
Him blocking shots or That's anything fair. Like that.
Keep him fresh for 5-on-5 in power play.
He is your most valuable. But in OT, let him kill penalties. But he can do it.
No.
Why?
Because
he can do
if
it.
If you kill that off.
Yeah, he's going to be gassed.
Ah, good point.
Right?
This is why I don't coach in the NHL, Harm. See, you know, we'd be a good coaching staff, though, because I'd give you the vibes. I'd be like, well, Hughes is the best player. Put him out there.
But also 4-on-3. What? Like, Juleson almost, he got a large chunk of that McKinnon one-time bomb. What do you want Quinn Hughes?
That's a good point. That's a good point. See, that's why we'd be a really good coaching staff. Like, we would be. I'd be the head coach. Doesn't matter which coaching staff, but we'd
be the GM, and I'd fire you right away.
Yeah, I'd be like, all right, Harm, give me your best players. I'm going to put them all on the penalty kill. All right. Sorry, I'm just...
You'd be trying to roll out Noah Juleson 22 minutes a night, and I'd be like, dude, I'd have to trade away Noah Juleson. Right, like you hear about this sometimes.
It's like Moneyball. They have to trade away the guy because the coach is using him too much, and we want you to use this guy. Oh man, that was great. That was a great. Anyone else? Okay, did you have anything else that you want to get to before we close out today's show?
No, I'm good.
All right. People are asking for Filip Hronek contract comparables: Mackenzie Weegar, Damon Severson, Mikhail Sergachev.
So that's kind of in the range from 6.25, which was Weegar. I don't have Severson's handy, but I think it's close to.
Okay.
And then Sergachev's 8.5.
Did Uyghurs have the bonus of living Calgary like Huberto's did? Like Huberto wouldn't have got what he got from Calgary on the open market. Probably would have gone to the open market. But Calgary said, we're going to give you this right now if you sign to live in Calgary for the next 8 years. And Huberto was stupid not to take that contract.
You also have to factor in like percentage of cap too here, because it is going up and people are pretty hung up on, well, he can't make more than Quinn Hughes. And while I agree, it's all about what the percentage of cap hit is at the time that it's being signed compared to when Hughes was signed, right? So that's got to be factored in.
I like the idea of the internal cap that you can't pay more than Quinn Hughes.
Well, Hanifin will
Detroit rule.
Hanifin will also be a comp to look out for as a newer, as we talk about cap going
up and
that sort of thing. That's one to keep an eye on.
All right. Sergachev was a massive over. There's two. Do you have the chat open?
I don't.
Okay. So there's two. Sorry. Excuse me. So PHS, whose name I used to say full, but I shortened it. He changed his name now to Karen Versation. Karen, not Karen, like Karen Versation. Oh, Karen Versation. And he has an updated photo as well.
That's good.
And that just made my day. Okay, here's a good one. We'll close it on this. From Nar, would you rather fight Nikita Zadorov or 30 squirrels at once? Nar has been asking nonstop squirrel questions all week, and I'm finally going to answer one. Would you rather fight Nikita Zadorov or 30 squirrels at once? Because, okay, and that's the thing.
Zadorov.
His teeth. Yeah, it's Zadorov,
he's
right?
He's not a good fighter. He's just big.
You better be careful there, Grady. Yeah. We see him fighting on skates. We're not asking if we're going to fight him on skates.
Fair. Yes.
If Nikita Zadorov walks toward you on the sidewalk and says, hey, I want to fight you, you're not like...
Well, of course not.
Well, that's what you're saying. You're like, yeah, give me Nikita Zadorov.
Do I have a weapon? Like, against the...
No, you don't have a weapon!
Like, because what am I supposed to do against 30 squirrels?
That's the thing. You'd have to, like... pick them off.
30's a lot.
With no weapon, too? Yeah, you're right. Like, what are you going to do?
I would need, like, give me a baseball bat or something, you know, for the squirrels.
They'll come nibbling at you.
Give me a baseball bat for Zadorov, too, no?
I'm just joking. Would probably still lose that.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more
you just swing and you just grab it.
You're losing. Okay, so let's establish this. You're losing either way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're going to lose to the squirrels, and you and I are both losing to Zadorov.
Oh, yeah.
So what would hurt the I'm going Zadorov, because Zadorov's not going to bite you to death, right? You hope? Unless Zadorov was feeling really crazy that day.
Just take one punch and pretend you're dead. Like, pretend you're knocked out.
I don't think you'd have to pretend, is what I was saying. Like, that's actually true. My thought process pretty is, true. Like, Zadorov could probably knock us out one, maybe two punches, right?
I just run.
How fast is Nikita Zadorov on feet? We're going to see him. I'll talk to him next practice.
I'm light. You know, I'm fast. I keep in good shape.
Do you keep in as good shape as an NHL hockey player?
But you have to keep in mind he's a big boy. Like,
I'm still pretty sure Nikita Zadorov could run for longer
than
you
could. I'd rather take my chances running than with fists.
Big Russian bear.
So I think we've established we both want Zadorov. Me, because I think it would be a quiet exit for me. You, because you somehow think you can outrun Nikita Zadorov.
I feel like it's not that I think I could beat him in a long distance. I just think at a certain point he'd be like, you know what? Screw this guy. Like, I don't really care.
No, in this scenario, Nikita Zadorov has to fight you.
What, did I like gritty or something?
That's right. Yes, that's right. Yes. All right, we'll close it out there. We're going to see Nikita at practice tomorrow, hopefully. Maybe we'll ask him. Anyways. All right, we'll close it out there. This is a fun episode, folks. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about more squirrel conversation. For my co-host Harmon Dial and our technical producer Grady Sass, my name is Jake Vigilli. Our thanks again to Cam Robinson for joining us. That felt like ages ago on this episode of Canucks Conversation. Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads, brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range, since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back, and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.